Hey everybody, welcome to the month of March. This is Ryan Cassidy and I'm with Coach Childs. This is a coach, a captain, and a conversation podcast. Coach, great to be talking with you again. As always, do you just want to introduce the topic that we will be discussing for episode 3?
Yeah, I'm excited to be on for episode 3. Today we're going to talk about playing time you know, from all the different aspects as a coach, you know, what the coach is thinking as a player, how can I get more playing time? And then as a parent, you know, why is the coach doing what he's doing? And what can I, where do I fit in as a parent when it comes to playing time? Unlike the first two topics, this is something that's not really written about, the specifics of playing time. And so we have a little less resources for the listeners today, but hopefully it creates a pretty candid content for you all to listen to and learn from.
I guess the first thing that comes to mind with just kind of where we are in the season is, you know, by now you probably know, you know, who your starters are. You know, the MIAA, like, is just starting their practice, but, like, down here in Texas, teams are already 3 and 4 games in, and there's already been some matchups where it's, you know, the number one team versus the number two team. So just kind of where you are in a calendar, you've probably got your starting roster figured out for the most part, or maybe you have your outliers figured out, but what for you, just where you are in the season, where are you kind of struggling with that playing time just right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think you probably, for those that aren't coaches listening, you probably don't realize the amount of time that we think about this, who's going to play and what moments and what game situations. And, you know, you're on the road recruiting in the summer and you're writing out depth charts and the season doesn't start for another 6 months. So we do this all the time as a coach, and it doesn't always kind of turn out the way that you planned. So, you know, 2-3 weeks in, a month in, whatever it is, a lot of things have changed. And whether it's something uncontrollable like an injury, or it's something controllable like someone's attitude or work ethic or whatever, but these things do change and evolve and constantly. As soon as you feel like you're settled into a starting lineup, something's going to change, and or at least have you questioning. It could be, like I said, injury. It could be a losing streak. It could be anything. And so coaches are constantly kind of reviewing, you know, who gives us the best chance to win. And I think that's kind of the root of the conversation, is that generally speaking, you know, I think one way to look at it is it's a very black and white thing. The coaches are going to play, you know, who gives them the best chance to win.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I was talking to a Patriot League assistant coach, and he was telling me about the team meetings that they have in the fall with the parents. And the coach essentially just opens up with this liner of, look, I'm paid to win games. It's Division I lacrosse. And there are kids on this team that I like more than others as people. I just get along with them better. I laugh with them. We have the same sense of humor, and there's just this chemistry, but they're not as good. And so I'm not going to play them, because at the end of the day, my job and the rest of the staff's job is to win the game. So I think for this podcast, I think, you know, it would be great of you kind of offering that coach's perspective of, hey, listen, I'm going to play the guys that, well, heck, even the coach's wife's perspective of, I'm, you know, we're going to put the guys on the field that give us the best chance to win. And then for me, and my perspective of, okay, let's say I'm not getting playing time. That could be either because I'm at the bottom of the depth chart, and that's just how it works. Or two, maybe I'm in this gray middle area where it's like, I make a couple good plays in practice and all of a sudden I'm in the second line, and then I screw up in the game and now I'm back to, like, scout team. You know, I would think as a player, really throughout the season, you know, your job, I would encourage all players to just kind of focus on just getting better. You know, regardless if you're the starter or the last guy in the depth chart, you still need to be improving and working on your game, you know, outside of practice. How, as a coaching staff, would you want a player to kind of approach the playing time question? Because I know there's a lot of kids that probably just ask that question just to ask it. But for you, when you have a kid that comes in the office and says, hey, what do I need to do to play? How should, I guess, first that player approach you or approach their coach to navigate that kind of weird, awkward question?
Yeah, well, the first thing from a coach's standpoint is you got to be honest with your players. This isn't something that I was comfortable with early on in my coaching career. Kid comes in and you love the kid to death. He asks why he's not playing more, and to try to like let him down easily, you paint this like this wonderful picture of how close he is. You know, you're so close to being the starting goalie. It's just a couple more weeks of work, and it's like you're, you know, breaking up with a girl and you're letting her down easy kind of thing, as opposed to just telling the girl it's not working out. And at the end of the day, what's best is just candid honesty. This happened to me, you know, this has happened to me this year, you know, and I think going back to your Patriot League example, I think there is truth in that coaches have favorites. They do. And they have favorites because there are players on the team that work harder than others. There are players on the team that get better grades than others. There are players on the other team that are more coachable than others. And so naturally you have favorites because you yourself have interests and desires and what you want your player to be. And so you do have favorites. And I can tell you that we don't always play our favorites. We play the group that we think gives us the best chance to be our best. And sometimes that's our favorites and sometimes it's not. So what I would say, this happened to us with one of my favorites. He came in about 2 weeks ago and, you know, asked, and I don't know how much he asked, like, what can I do to get more playing time, or worded it that way, but some variation of that question. And I got to tell you, I sat in my office with this kid sitting in the chair. It felt like an hour of silence. It was probably 5 minutes or a minute and a half, but it felt like an hour of just me just wanting to say it nicer than I could. But what he needed to hear was the truth. And the truth was that his approaches to Dodgers aren't good enough. It was that simple. His work ethic, phenomenal. His grades, phenomenal. Like, there's not one guy on my team I'd rather date my daughter than this guy. Like, he is everything a coach would want a defender on his team to be, with the exception of his approaches to Dodgers. And what I need my defender to be is to have great approaches to Dodgers. And Ryan, the beauty of being honest with him is I looked out my window later that day and he was out there guarding our best player. So he left my office. He called the best player on the team and said, I need to guard you before practice starts to get better at my approaches. That guy, if you're listening as a player, that's what you got to do. You got to have the guts to answer go and ask the question. And then you got to be humble enough to hear the answer. And then you got to go do something about it. I heard a quote yesterday, and we used it as a team for our film session, from Brian Kite, who we referenced Brian's dad, Tim Kite, in our last podcast. And it was, it doesn't matter, get better. nothing more simple than that. It doesn't matter, get better. If you're not getting enough playing time, it doesn't matter, get better. If you're getting playing time, it doesn't matter, get better. If you were an All-American last year, it doesn't matter, get better. If you were not an All-American last year, but you felt like you should be an All-American, it doesn't matter, get better. I think it's the simplest quote to address where you are on the depth chart or how much playing time you're getting, whether you're getting a lot or you're getting a little, it doesn't matter, get better. You know, I think that's the starting point, is everybody understanding that the coach is going to play the group that he thinks gives us the best chance to win. And then from there, we do have favorites. Our favorites don't always play, but – there's probably a gray area that we'll start to get to in this conversation about, you know, maybe if you do go out and you have that attitude of it doesn't matter, get better, maybe you're going to start to steal some minutes that you weren't going to get otherwise.
It's funny that you talk about, you know, you're always focusing on getting better, you know, regardless. In a weird way, and this might come off as, I don't know, contrarian, but if you're not getting playing time, for me, it's almost as if the stress of the week is lifted. And now all you have to focus on, it's selfless and selfish, is your game. Like, you just need to work on your deficiencies. And if you work on your deficiencies, you're not stressed about the game plan. You're not stressed about playing time, whether or not you think that third line midfield's going to get the runs that you feel like they deserve. If you're just focused on your development, it's almost like this fall ball atmosphere with regards to skill development and focusing on the fundamentals and working on your conditioning and spending extra time in the weight room, you know, once practice is over. It almost relieves that stress and the mental, I guess, mental stress of, you know, digesting a scouting report, understanding the game plan, and then playing during game time. I think that's something that playing multiple sports in high school can teach you. It teaches you how to be patient. It teaches you also how to be a good teammate. I mean, I'm 5'5", that half being very important. And throughout high school, I weighed 125 pounds until my junior year, going into my senior year. Mac Brown was not knocking on my door to be the next deep snapper for the University of Texas Longhorns. But I played football in high school, and our average lineman weighed 295 pounds. And there was no chance in hell I was going to play. I mean, if I played, that's a serious issue for our program. Like that's not me being good. That's us being terrible. And so I realized that, and so I just said, okay, I'm going to be the best scout team player that I possibly can be for the varsity team. And that's exactly what I did. And so for the first 5 minutes of practice, we would work on screens, and I would have to pretend like I didn't know a pulling guard that weighed 305 pounds was going to earhole me, or I had to pretend like I didn't know a crack black block was coming from the slot receiver. But I just did it because I realized this was how I would help the team out. But I was also probably working harder than a lot of the varsity guys. We had a calendar where we signed in for Christmas workouts, and I went every single day of Christmas break. I went every single day of Thanksgiving break. And while, you know, maybe I didn't get to play as much on game day, my impact on that team was felt. And I certainly don't think it's not a coincidence that we had probably the greatest scout team ever, that to that date we had the best success in program history. And it's because we had a bunch of guys like me that were invested in the scout team. And that, I guess, that in a weird way, that acceptance of, look, you're not going to be the star player, you're probably not going to play this Saturday, those are the facts. Those are black and white. What are you going to do about it? You can either sit and pout and call mom and dad and say, coach sucks and he doesn't like me and this kid is getting more playing time because he's a favorite. Or, you know, like we talked about last time, you can be above the line or below the line. Or you can just go play wall ball. You can work on your shot. You can work on your approaches. And you can be the best scout team man up unit preparing the man down unit for Saturday. And eventually, I think that hard work of just trying to make the team better will eventually, there should be some trickle down to where you're, like you said, you're going to see some minutes that you probably wouldn't have seen if you just sulked, were the guy on the bench and just kind of was like, you know what, this is where I'm at the depth chart and it's not fair. I have no control over where I am. I guess my question to you would be, because it is, I think it's a weird thing, because as a lacrosse player, I don't think I would have ever been content with not playing, or I don't even know if that's the right word, but like in football, there was no way in hell I was going to play. And if I did, I'd be like eating a hamburger through a blender, like a hamburger smoothie, because I was just so small. So how do you balance, like, with, your defenseman coming in the other day, where it's the contentment, or maybe the understanding that you're not going to play, without the disappointment or that lingering depression of, man, I'm not playing right now. How do you advise your guys to kind of balance that if their name maybe isn't on the game sheet, so to speak? How are they supposed to act that following week?
Well, I have a whole lot of things to say to that. The first of which is, I think, given the current state of Texas football, and if you are as good as you claim to be as a scout guy, maybe they should have picked you up. That's my first thought on this topic. The second thing is, I think you kind of alluded to two different things that if I was listening onto this podcast, I think might have contradicted itself, which was this idea originally of, well, man, I'm not getting any playing time, which is great because when I show up to practice, I can really just focus in on me and my skill and my development. And I think what you were kind of alluding to is maybe not having the pressure to perform at practice so that there's confidence in you for game day. But really, all of that comes outside of practice, what you're alluding to. The example I gave of the kid in the approaches, he was out there doing that outside of practice. Because in practice time, what we as coaches need is what you were saying your football experience was, which is, I mean, quite honestly, forget about me, I love you. I heard this at the IMLCA convention. I was at the FCA breakfast, and Scott Beda from Lafayette said that. He said, "Family stands for forget about me, I love you." I've never written a note at a convention as big as that note. I loved it. I didn't know Scott. I tracked him down, and I asked him, and he gave the credit to PJ Fleck, Mr. Row Your Boat from Minnesota football. And I'm telling you, and I'm not lying to my listeners when I say this, but every night, my boys, my two sons and I, we put our hands in like it's a huddle, and they say, "Forget about me, I love you," and then we all yell family. And I think it's the number one lesson in which I would like my own sons to be ingrained into their head. So and I think that's what we're talking about. When you're not getting playing time, Brad Stevens puts it this way, you have a choice to make when you're not getting playing time. Either you're invested in a great teammate or you're not. So you're either about you or you're about the team. And a lot of times the guys that aren't playing in the game have a huge impact on that game. And so, our season opener, we're playing a team with a great left-handed first team, preseason first team All-American attackman lefty. And we're just using guys that aren't going to play on Saturday that are left-handed to emulate this player all week. We hold the kid to a single goal. We win the game, and that's what I'm talking about after the game. Not the guy who actually guarded the All-American, but the guy that week that was that All-American for us. And so you as the coach, you have to convey through your culture, and going back a couple episodes, your three core beliefs. One of them has to address this. It has to address kind of serving other people and being about the family and forgetting about yourself. So that's what you need to do if you're not getting playing time. Quite honestly, is you got to forget about yourself between 4 and 6 or whenever your practice time is. But then outside of 4 and 6, that's where you can be discontent. And so you said, the sentence, I was never going to be content with not getting playing time in the lacrosse field, but you kind of like started to say that maybe you were with football because you were realistic with your size and whatnot. But you weren't content. That's why you went to all those workouts. You were trying to outperform or, overachieve what a 5'4", 110-pound kid could do, right? And so So that's kind of the way I would attack it if I'm listening to this conversation is outside of practice time, I'm going to be pretty discontent with this. And inside of practice time, I'm not going to be content. I'm going to be selfless. I'm going to forget about me and I'm going to serve my teammates. And this is where playing time isn't black and white as a coach. So yes, I want to play the team that is going to give us the best chance to win. And you even alluded to this. You know, my wife wants me to play the team that gives us the best chance to win even more than I do, you know, and I have to answer to her at the end of the day, right? A happy wife, a happy life. So, but there is this like gray area where as a coach, you're making decisions on who's playing based on the future of your program. So maybe we might not win this Saturday if I play this guy, but we're going to be winning for many Saturdays to come if I start playing this guy. And that's where it does become a little gray. And I think that's where, you know, parents start to question, like, why the heck is this guy in? And the parents are questioning that because they didn't see how well that guy forgot about himself and served his teammates. And so as a coach, sometimes kind of you can earn playing time by being all in the culture of the team. If your talent maybe doesn't demand that playing time.
So, you know, and you touched on something I guess that I failed to mention, and we usually close out with this, so I'll just be super brief with it. But the one thing I will say with being a scouting guy in high school was there's a coach at Westwood that's still there. His name's Paul Thaling. And he made us, and us being the scout team guys, feel like we were absolute royalty. Like it was almost like if you kick our butts Monday through Thursday, it doesn't even matter who we're playing on Friday because the game is already won. And so he would have us, he would bring us in early while the varsity's watching their film. He would bring the scout unit and we would watch film of the in the morning of who we were supposed to be. And then he would create these little profiles of these kids. And this was before Facebook, so it wasn't like you could creep too hard. But he would give us these personalities of these kids and we would become Pflugerville's outside linebacking core. The other thing that I think is important with, you know, if you're not getting playing time, you ask your coach, hey, what's the deal? And it's, hey, your approaches aren't good enough. If you're the best player, it's almost an additional burden that you have is making those guys better. And so it wasn't like the defenseman that came in went to ask to do approaches on somebody that was kind of at his level or that he knew he could win that matchup. He went to the best player, and then the best player said okay. There's a Mike Daly, who's now at Brown, had this awesome quote where it was like, you know, if you're doing extra work by yourself, you are selfish because all you're thinking about is if you're an attackman that's working on your shots and it's just you, all you're thinking about is your goals, your stats, you know, it's all about you. But if you bring somebody along, it goes from this selfish act to this selfless act. And so when he was at Tufts, you weren't allowed to do extra work without somebody else. So I think it's important too that, you know, credit to, you know, I don't know who the attackman was that went out there, but that's a selfless act where, you know, he could probably be resting considering he's probably getting his butt kicked during the game. But he's willing to take these extra slashes, these extra cross checks to the hip, because he knows it's going to make him better. And to be honest, probably because he loves his teammate and he knows it's going to help him and help the team in the long run.
Yeah, the beauty of that scenario, if you've listened to these first two podcasts prior to this one, the beauty of you bringing this up is that the guy he called was our one captain. Our one captain, the guy, and he knew he would be there. And so going back to episode one, that's who he called, which is awesome. I want to say this because this we referenced playing other sports. So, you know, primarily probably we're talking to lacrosse, you know, coaches, players, parents right now. And you've done a lot of talk about football. I'm about to bring up high school basketball. you know, I think it's very kind of cliche and catchy to promote playing multiple sports nowadays, but us in the lacrosse world, we're talking out of both ends of our mouth because, you know, those us, you know, us coaches that are, you know, out recruiting every weekend in November when kids should be playing, you know, soccer or football or running cross country or something, but we're out there recruiting. So, I'm going to run the risk of being hypocritical just like everybody else here, but the biggest value I see in playing multiple sports is that generally kids are specializing in the sport they're good at. And so naturally, if everybody's going to specialize to lacrosse, it's a sport they're good at, therefore they're playing more. And the beauty to you not specializing when you were in high school and playing football as an undersized guy was you learned all of this. So then when you got to playing college lacrosse, where everyone is good at the next level and you may not get playing time, you've been there before. For me, it was basketball. You know, I went to we were bad at basketball, you know, my high school. I went to like a lacrosse high school where our starting lineup was five lacrosse players and I wasn't good enough to be one of them, you know. So I was a bench warmer on a bad high school basketball team. But I loved it. And I think that's where I learned what your role is and how you need to be about the team. If you're listening as an athlete and you're starting to feel this pressure that I should start specializing in another sport, or you're a parent and you desire to have a well-rounded, you know, kid or a great teammate as a son or a daughter, don't let them stop that sport. Let them learn through the difficulties of not getting a lot of playing time, no matter how hard you work. Because then what ends up happening is, you're more valuable to your team than the guy that is getting that playing time. And I understand that sounds so weird, you know, that the guy who's actually out there making the play, but in the grand scheme of things, like, the guy who's sacrificing to make the guy who's playing better has a longer lasting impact on a program than just the last guy to touch it in your motion offense who throws it in the goal. It's a lot easier to be really good at throwing a lacrosse ball on a goal than it is to be really good at being a great teammate. And us as coaches, just like your football coach did, we have to promote that. And sometimes it means playing a kid maybe more than he should. And you got to be okay losing a game or two to have your culture be bigger than your outcome or your result. And so, and we've done this here. You know, there's a couple scenarios and where we've played some kids because they were just outstanding about putting the team first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny you say that. You know, when I was at High Point, I think we did a really, really good job of this, almost to the point where it was almost probably more desirable to almost be a scout team guy, because the amount of praise and just even the guys on the team, like, we just promoted being a scout team guy and how important that was so much that everybody bought in. And I remember, you know, we had this kid, there's two stories. One, we had this kid, Nick Basile, who just graduated, big left-handed middie. And we were getting ready to play Jacksonville, and they had these two really dynamic attackmen. And so for the entire week, Nick got, abused in practice Monday through Friday. And we ended up beating Jacksonville. And we give a game ball out every game. And, you know, we give it to Pat Farrell, who's now playing with the Florida Launch, who did an awesome job. And, like, before we could even clap for him, he threw it to Nick and said, Nick is the real, like, hero of Saturday, because he prepared us for what my job was that weekend. So it's all Nick that did all the work. And so Nick gets the game ball. But the other thing that we do is we'll have a scout team player of the week. And then we'll have, traditionally, we would have an opener for that player. So fast forward 2 years, we're playing Marist at home, and Nick has to be, I believe the kid's JD Recor, who just graduated, this big left-handed attackman. And he just got his butt kicked all week. And so we made a set play for Nick, and he scored on it, and, you know, the bench explodes. But we would do that every week. We would have a scout team guy, and we would kind of vote on it. The staff would talk about it. And then we would reward that scout team guy with a set play sometime during the game. Usually it was during, you know, it'd be our opening possession, so we would have these openers. But then we'd also kind of do it out of a timeout to reward those guys for their effort and kind of, in a way, showing appreciation and really, again, recognizing the sacrifice and the effort that they put in that. Again, it does not show up on the stat sheet, and the parents that just come to the game, the fans that just come to the game on Saturday, they have no idea the amount of work that they put in. So that was kind of our small way of just recognizing those guys for their sacrifice.
We... Here at York, we went to such an extreme a couple years back where we had an All-American goalie, and in that group we had two senior goalies. A lot of this actually happened his junior year, I believe. But two kids in the same graduating class, starting goalie is an All-American. And, you know, his backup, same class, he just did an unbelievable job, whether it's in the weight room, in the classroom. He just served everybody. He would help his classmates with class selections. So everybody was on, you know, track to graduate. And if you take this class at this time, and then that's a prerequisite for that class. And, you know, graduating college nowadays, it takes some serious help with your advisor. And our backup goalie was like, he was their advisor. You know, he did everything that a coach could want. And he was actually pretty darn good. You know, he's a starter on most teams. He's just the backup to, you know, a 6'5", 250-pound All-American goalie who's quick. You know, it's like, and I thought long and hard about it, you know, and I'm thinking now, you know, I saw this on Twitter, I don't know, a month ago, but the Shane Battier, who plays basketball at Duke and, you know, a pretty successful NBA career, has a quote that says, "I don't complain about playing time. My job is to play so well that the coach can't sit me." And in this instance with our goalie, he did that. He never complained about playing time. He just played so well that as a coach, like, I couldn't sit him. But our All-American never did enough that I could sit him either. And after just... kind of like what you're saying at High Point with like a coach's conversation that probably goes so long because you're trying to figure out a way to reward him. I felt like it was days of trying to figure this thing out. We created the man down goalie. And so we didn't split halves. We didn't split games. We didn't split quarters. But when York went man down, we put in a different goalie. And I'm telling you, like, the Lax Power forums bashed me for it.
Yes. SIDs probably didn't like you either because the stats would always be so screwed up.
They hated me because they had to figure out when a different goalie went in, you know, and who made the save. And but if you go back, and I don't know these exact stats, but if you go back to 2015, 2016 seasons at York and look at the York College man down percentage, I'm confident it would rank among the, you know, the top 10 in the country, with our All-American goalie on the bench because of the message that sent to our man down unit. And what ended up happening was it allowed our backup goalie, which we never called him that. We called him our man down goalie, which was so cool. You know, how many teams have a man down goalie? But it allowed our man down goalie to have a focus. And so when you talked about watching film and as a scout team guy, he was watching film as the man down goalie. He had every man down play. He had tendencies. He had where their shots were coming from. He had the tendencies of the shooters. He had such a singular focus as his role that he mastered it in our man down unit. I don't know. I probably don't need to say any more than this, but just to paint it in perspective, it became – By like committing as a coach to do it, it gave us, it was a strength of ours. I never thought to not do it. We were playing Gettysburg in 2016, and at the time they were number 3 in the country and we were number 9 in the country. we're winning 9-7 or no, 8-7. It was one goal. We're winning 8-7 in the fourth quarter, and the first penalty of the game had happened, and our starting goalie had 17 saves. We're in the fourth quarter, beating number three team in the country by one goal, and that's when I had to make the decision. And I never even thought about it. I just put in our man down goalie. He made a save. He came out, face dodged the attackman who slashed him, the old lazy attack ride on the goalie. So he slashes him. We go man up and score. We win the game 9-7. And it never even crossed my mind that we were taking out an All-American goalie who had made 17 saves, because I, at that point, we had done it so many times with such success that what gave us the best chance to win in that moment was the best man for the job when we were man down, which was our man down goalie. And I think to other people, it just looked crazy, but to us, it ultimately was, that was the guy that gave us the best chance to win. But the decision was made because I asked myself the question as the coach, has this guy done his job so well that I can't sit him? And the answer in that case was yes. So we haven't had a man down goalie since. I don't think it's something that we're recruiting for or anything like that. But it was a situation in which the kid made it so I couldn't have him on the bench anymore. And it's an extreme case, I think, but it was one that I thought taught our team and changed, quite honestly, it changed our culture. By putting an All-American goalie on the bench and putting a non-warmed up, you know, cold backup in when we went man down. And so every player in our program now knows that if they do enough, the coach is crazy enough to find a way to reward them for it with playing time.
Yeah, and you know, if you fast forward, you know, 40 years from now when you guys, you know, are at the Mustang Classic and all the alumni are back, that's something that, you know, man down goalie, that's unique in and of itself. But there's guys that I played with at York that never really played, but I relate to those guys and I love those guys more than, you know, maybe somebody who scored like a gajillion goals. But when we get together, we never talk about the games, unless it was like you yelling at me after we lost in triple overtime at McDaniel because I like had a poor slide, and like, oh man, remember when coach like made fun of you as you're walking down? It's like, yeah, I remember that, and we all laugh about it, and it's great. But you'll be remembered more if you're a better teammate than if you sulk and you kind of take that playing time in like a selfish prima donna way. In a weird way, like, again, I think I said it in the last podcast as well, but there's no stats on championship rings. And, you know, the one that might be on there is your record, you know, at a high point. And I think at most Division I schools, they do rings for conference championships. I know when you guys beat Salisbury, you know, you get the CAC t-shirt. There's no stats on that. It just says you're a CAC champion. There's no stats on our Southern Conference rings. It just says, you know, Ryan Cassidy, HPU, SoCon champs. And I think it's you as a player would be very nearsighted to think that just because you're not playing means that you don't have an impact on a Saturday or a Wednesday evening. That to me, I think it goes back on the coaching staff to create that culture and almost brainwash, you know, your guys to think, hey, you know, they might not believe it at first, so they just kind of have to repeat it, and then they'll start to see that, hey, I'm not playing, but my actions on a Monday through Thursday or Monday through Friday prepped the guys that are playing. And then something that I think York does a really good job of, and I think Duke at the Division I level does a really good job of, is they get excited for each other selflessly when their teammates do great stuff. So I think if you just could have film of like the sideline of a York game, the guys that are busting their butt Monday through Friday to give the best scout team look, then are then going to the weight room and lifting weights, and then after that taking shots. Those guys are exhausted at the end of a game because they're so busy encouraging and cheering on their teammates that even during the game, they're not on the field making any impact, but they are literally making an impact because they have a different perspective. So your backup faceoff guy, while he's not taking the faceoffs, he can always give that type of feedback that, you know, if Billy Sasso's taking the faceoff, he's just, you know, just going, you know, with his head in the ground trying to get this ball. He has no idea what his wings are doing, what the opponents are doing. But as a guy that's not playing, you get to see that, and you're removed from the stress of the game, and you can think a little bit clearer. For you, is that something that you guys talk about, or again, is that through the recruiting process of if you just find good kids, they manage to do that on their own? How do you kind of, I guess not necessarily reward the guys that don't play on game day, but how do you address the guys that don't play on the sidelines? What are their kind of roles so they still have an impact on a game day, just maybe not, again, on the stat sheet?
Yeah, well, it goes beyond just recruiting good kids. You know, good kids want to get playing time too, and, you know, good kids have some, you know, selfish ambition at times, you know. And so it's got to be more than just recruiting good kids that were, you know, quote unquote, raised the right way or selflessly, because, you know, we all have it, right? So we all have our own wants and desires. They exist. It's the constant kind of education. That's what we're doing as coaches, is the constant education of putting your own wants and desires, you know, second to the team's wants and desires. And to get to your question, like, you have, when you're watching film with your team, you know, just as many times as you cut up, you know, the other team's big little offense and show them, you have to cut up your sideline after a goal. And you need to show, we just did this yesterday here at York, you know, we need to show those guys on the sideline that are so amped that we're scoring goals, that we are scoring goals, not that he scored a goal. And so you got to show it, you got to promote it. You know, this goes back to a lot of the culture conversation we had with rules and standards. You what you promote, you're permitting. And so you got to promote, you know, good, as opposed to just bringing attention to the bad, you know, going back to the rules and standards podcast. So you got to promote what you see on film with how they react on game days on the sideline, or just, you know, in every situation. And ultimately, you know, and I think this is going to help us switch gears to parents and how parents are involved, but would you rather be known as the teammate that did everything for the team, kind of going back to your point about, like, reminiscing, you know, you come back for like a 10-year reunion, you know, do you want to be known as the guy that scored all the goals, or do you want to be known for the guy that everybody loved, you know, the guy that behind the scenes was just adored. And so my, you know, to switch gears, my charge to parents listening to this is for you to answer that question. You know, what would you rather have, your son be known as the kid who scored all the goals, or your son to be known as the one that everyone adored or trusted or believed in or wanted in their foxhole? Sometimes the coach has to play the guy who scores all of the goals, even if the coach wants to play the guy who's most adored. But you as a parent have to see value in being the one that's most adored. And that's my recommendation to parents, is that just because a coach isn't playing your son doesn't mean the coach doesn't appreciate your son. And if you're a coach listening to this, you have to make it crystal clear that that kid is appreciated. And then you're not going to get phone calls from parents. If a parent knows my son's not playing, but my son is loved, your phone's not going to ring. If the parent thinks my son isn't playing and my son isn't loved, you're going to get a phone call. If not, then, you know, I guess you're just a crazy parent. But let's not be crazy parents here. Let's make sure that we're raising a generation that you know, can be adored for their selflessness, not for their ability to put the ball in the goal. And as a coaching, you know, speaking to coaches, let's have some moxie and some courage to play a kid or two who is adored, and find creative ways to do it. And I think what's going to end up happening is a better culture for your program, from parent to player to coach. Again, forget about me. I love you. And I think that's kind of where I would go with this, is you got to promote it. And then you got to find ways to show them, how appreciative you are for their efforts.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that we did at High Point with the freshman parents is we would have our freshman meeting, we would have a team meeting, but then we would have a freshman parent meeting. We would read this letter, and this is from a Hall of Fame coach who happened to have a son who played collegiately, and I'm just going to read the letter because I honestly think summarizing it doesn't do it justice. It says, "Dear parents, I've been meaning to write this letter for some time. This coming 2006 season will be my 32nd as a full-time college lacrosse coach. It will also be my final one as the parent of a collegiate athlete. I've been blessed in my career to have worked at two of the finest academic institutions in the country. There have been so many wonderful families and athletes that I have come to know over the years. Many remain my closest friends. My daughter, Molly, started in the field hockey goal for Columbia University between 1999 and 2002. My son Joe is presently a senior defenseman at Lynchburg College. I stand on the sidelines for a living and sit among parents at every possible opportunity. I would like to try and present some perspective on the often misunderstood relationship between the two. Let's start with recruiting. It would be immature and short-sighted for a coach to guarantee your son will be an immediate starter, nor guarantee that another young prospect will start over your son. As a coach, it is a base requirement to make every candidate and their family feel welcome during the recruiting process. As a parent, you need to be savvy enough to understand that this process is a predictive, inexact science at best. Coaches may certainly imply that a certain sequence of events is likely to happen, but playing time is determined on the practice field. When we recruited two goalies in the same class a few years back, the second candidate considered his decision and simply asked, 'Will I get a fair chance when I get here?' I assured him that there were 36 other young men who had a vested interest in determining the starting goalie. My son made the final choice to go to Lynchburg College. My wife and I were very comfortable with Steve Kadelka and the institution, but Joe was the one who would be making his way and living with the daily consequences. I once read that you become a man the day you leave home. I try to support my son in every way that I can, but I send him away to college to become a man, and that includes learning to deal with the joy and heartaches that he will encounter along his journey. College sports are a competitive enterprise. Without seeing him in the weight room, the locker room, the practice field, etc., on a daily basis, I am in no position to comment on the evolution of a coach's decision that determines his playing time on game day. I believe I do understand how difficult it is to watch your son struggle with his athletic experience. I hope you understand that it is near impossible for a parent to make an objective observation on that situation. My son is not a starter at Lynchburg, and during games, I find myself watching his movement on the bench at least as much as I follow the action on the field. We evaluate the event through the eyes of our children. Coaches' decisions, right or wrong, are made to put the team in the best position to succeed. A true story. A parent came up to me in the parking lot after a Virginia game and asked if he could have a word. We just beaten UMass. We were undefeated at the time, and we went on to win the national championship in May. When I said sure, the dad went to say, 'Great game. The team looks great. Can I make an unbiased observation?' Uh-oh. He went on to make what could have been an incredibly astute observation. 'You really need to work on your depth at the defensive end of the field,' if his son had not been the fourth or fifth defenseman on the team. Let your son grow up, bite your tongue, encourage him to talk to the coach, tell him to work harder and play better. The parents have an important role while the game is being played. They are the ambassadors for the program in the stands. I have witnessed the lone wolf parent who prefers the solitary stance off by himself, and the other who prowls throughout. Some sit quietly, some are more active participants. Whatever your persona, your behavior does make a difference. It is mildly amusing to hear the tone of personal indignation that accompanies the comments from the stands about rule interpretations and officiating. I hardly know the rules of our game, and as far as I can tell, accuracy is not a requirement for the vicarious expert. More importantly, support the team, its performance, and the coaching staff in a positive way. We are all working hard towards the same end. We all want the team to win and play well. Negative comments make that outcome harder to attain. We had a timeout during a game a few years back when the players actually spent the first moments talking about a parent and what the heck he was screaming about. Here's a piece of advice that I've always tried to follow. Don't cheer for your own son by name. We know who your son is, and we know you love him. We all saw him make the same play. Use that opportunity to praise someone else in a more supportive role. Your son plays, mine may not. A little understated and unilateral encouragement is classy and makes a lot of friends. I hope this insight is helpful. Let's enjoy a terrific spring. Go Lynchburg. That is from Dom Starja, the Hall of Fame head coach of the University of Virginia and Brown University. All right, so coach, in closing, like we do really with every episode so far, being a coach, what advice can you give to kind of summarize this episode to a player who is dissatisfied either with the amount of playing time that he's getting or the fact that he's not getting any playing time at all?
Yeah, you know, I think the first thing I'd say, and I'm big on repeating things that I think matter, so here goes again, but forget about me. I love this team, you know, and that's the first thing is put your own wants and desires behind the what's good for the team. But then behind the scenes, be a little discontent. You gotta be motivated. You gotta use the fact that you're not getting the playing time that you desire as motivation to get better. It doesn't matter, get better. And just if you could have that, I mean, if you every time you're presented with an opportunity to either be content or be discontent, answer that opportunity with it doesn't matter, get better. And it's as simple as that. And if you're at a loss or you're feeling down or you're lacking a little motivation, go have a conversation with your coach. It can't be mom. It can't be dad. It can't be an assistant coach. You go see the head coach, and you ask him to be honest with you. And if you're willing to do that, you also have to be willing to hear the truth. And if you're strong enough to ask for the truth and strong enough to hear the truth, that's going to be all the motivation you need to go and get better. And that would be my advice. And from a parent standpoint, while I'm at it, it probably doesn't need to say much more than Coach Starja's letter, but as a parent myself, and my perspective changed as a coach when I became a parent, because now I am that crazy parent who loves their kid. The happiness of my children is what is most important to me in my life. And I would imagine my son will be happier playing than sitting and watching. And so I can see myself getting put in this situation. Therefore, I need to raise my children to understand that their value comes from their impact on the team, not how much playing time they get. And as I said earlier in this podcast, you can have a greater impact on the team without playing than some guys do that are playing. Being admired, being trusted, being voted captain, being the one that everyone looks to as the standard of what the culture should be is a lot harder than throwing a round ball on a goal. And let's raise a generation of parents of kids that understand that their value is determined by what they do for their team, not how many minutes they play or how many goals they score. And if we do that, our kids will be happy knowing that they've had that value and that impact on their team. And you as a parent will be happy knowing that your child is happy. And is playing a big role on the team, regardless of the minutes on Saturday. I guess. So then to flip it, you know, I guess what would you say to a coach, Ryan, you know, who, as a guy who, you know, I guess that high school football kid, you know, what do you say to a coach? Advice do you give to a coach to get them to, you know, to understand playing time from the perspective of a player who isn't getting the playing time that they wish they would?
You know, you just have to make it a big deal. You know, I would advise, you know, one, privately, you know, telling that individual and illustrating their importance to the team individually. I would also think that public praise for the scout team unit would be something that, again, just elevates and recognizes the importance of the guys that maybe aren't playing. Again, at High Point, we had Scout Team 6 shirts that we would give the guys, and it was, we even had cuts, like, hey, you're not a Scout Team player today, because you're not giving that kind of effort that we need. So it was something that we held in a very high esteem, the same way that Coach Thaling at Westwood made you feel very important, and he just reinforced that importance at, you know, daily, whether, again, it was in front of the group or just individually. He made sure he recognized, you know, your effort. The second thing I think that you can do, and again, it might come on a Monday after a game, and it's something that we did, is you would splice up practice film of, again, Nick Basile pretending to be JD Recor, and then we would show film of, you know, the actual game, and we would just spend that small amount of time on Monday just showing the guys, look, Nick Basile went all in Monday through Thursday, and it paid off on Saturday. Heck, Nick was a better JD Recor than JD Recor was all week, and that's what allowed us to win. And so if you just acknowledge the importance of the guys that aren't playing, and then you also illustrate, and again, it's not just coaching, you know, a coach talking, but it's, no, here it is on paper. This is what happens when we get effort from the scout team guys. Good things happen. I think you're going to get a lot of buy-in from players that aren't happy with their playing time on Saturday, but they understand the importance of their role on a Monday through Thursday, and ensuring that they are providing the team with the best opportunity to win on Saturday. But again, it just goes back to the culture and kind of what you praise and what you value as a coach and as a coaching staff. So that wraps up episode 3 of the Coach, A Captain in a Conversation podcast. Do you, Coach, just want to preview what we will be discussing for the month of April before we wrap up?
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy. It's going to be April before we know it, and April lacrosse means higher stakes. So we're going to talk a little bit about coaching under the pressure of high stakes lacrosse. You win or you go home, kind of a lacrosse type of time of year, and then playing under high stakes lacrosse in April. I think one of the resources we're going to use is the book Relentless by Tim Grover. It was Kobe Bryant's trainer. And looking forward to talking about it. I think there's going to be some very interesting, debatable topics. Looking forward to talking about, you know, how to play and coach when the stakes are pretty high.
Coach, again, awesome to talk to you, and I will catch up with you next month.
All right, sounds good, Ryan. I'll talk to you soon.